You're listening to Curiosity Invited with David Bryan here on LA Talk Radio.
Hello, my name is David Bryan, and this is Curiosity Invited, a podcast inspired by endless curiosity. Tune in for an open-minded conversation about interesting and important things. Here we go. Hello, everybody. Welcome to Curiosity Invited. And what a treat. Well, it's a treat for me because today I get to speak with Alec Egan. And unbeknownst to me, maybe I was living under a rock, unbeknownst to me, Alec Egan is a name that a bunch of people probably know. Certainly, if you pay any attention to the art world and contemporary art, then you know his name. But Alec Egan, I know Alec from a while ago. He was a student at a school I worked at, and he's one of my favorite people. And then lo and behold, turns out he's one of a lot of people's favorite people.
One can hope.
So, how are you, Alec? And thank you, for being willing to do this and spend some time and yada yada yada. So,
of course, David. Thank you for having me. And yeah. you're one of my favorite people, really. And I want to talk about all that today. No, but it made me think. You know, even I'm sure we were going to talk about art today, and it was just making me think about how blessed I've been with people like you. You know, you were kind of the beginning. I had a shitty fucking run at first with teachers and being seen and or understood or heard, which I think is the teenage angst in general, but the ethos of the teen. But
well, it's the teenage angst because adults are sometimes really fucked up when it comes to
true kids. Yeah. And so it was like a real, you know, and then I've had to, yeah, I mean, full transparency, I'm applying, I don't know if the listener, but yeah, I'm applying for my daughter to go to New Roads, who's a fuck,
yeah, but getting
into, wants to go to kindergarten, should be going to kindergarten next year at a grade school. New Roads is the place that we're putting all of our eggs in that basket. And I've been thinking just holistically about what it meant to me, and that was a bizarre to that sea change of feeling completely unseen, feeling like teachers were instruments of institutions, kind of could have been faceless, could have been for whatever, you know, and then to be at New Roads where it was the direct opposite. I just felt so much like everybody was in it together. And I knew that they were, because it was such, at that moment of the school, it was the beginning of the everything. And so yeah, there was no, like, no one person that I felt was more important than another person. And that was intrinsic to the student body too. Like, there were no nerds and there were no cool guys. And there was just everybody there, you know?
Yeah.
That's kind of an amazing, that's a once in a life.
It's an amazing thing. It really is. And I the way I looked at it, and God, people, this probably bore the shit out of people, but then here we are. It wasn't that there weren't nerds and that there weren't jocks and that there weren't whatever, you know, it was that everybody was incredibly generous to those other people. Whereas, like, I know when I grew up, you know, the jocks didn't talk to the theater people, and the theater people didn't talk to the jocks, and those were the cool kids, and those were the nerds, and those were the, you know, the popular kids. And so, like, those kids were, everybody was there.
Yeah.
But it was like all of it had currency, you know, somehow in other places, there's like this pecking order of like, this is cool, that's not cool, this is okay, that's, and there it was like, hey, you're a jock. I'm a computer geek, but that's cool.
Right.
That's cool. I like, you know, I don't do that, but it just was amazing. It really was amazing.
I agree. And it was all kind of predicated on like finding the through line between it all. And then discourse like at the center of all that. Like you had to fucking talk to people. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like I would have lunch with people who were so unlike me. And every day I had lunch with the same guys. Like, I don't want to say their names, but great guys. But what I mean by all this is like, it encouraged me to look at teachers like, oh, I can talk to them. I need to talk to them. And you were the first guy that I kind of felt that way. You allowed me in. And so it was just a very humanizing experience. And I told you this last time we spoke, but in the context of every other part of my life that was absolutely haywire, divorce, my brother was institutionalized. I'm confident that New Road saved my life, you know? And so what a validating educational experience. And that brought me into college. And this is what I was thinking about before I came here today, because I knew you were going to ask about painting. I had the same experience with a painting teacher. I was not a painter. I was a creative writing major, and I was the captain of the rugby team and drinking a lot and doing a lot of crazy shit. But I'd sneak into the painting studio at night and paint just to express myself and be a wild man and get my hands and everything. And I fell asleep in there one night, and the head of the painting department found me kind of in the morning, just scrambling around. And she was like, "Is this your work?" And it was bad, David. It wasn't good, but there was something in it, I guess. And she was like, "I'd never heard this before in my life." She said, "You know, you can do this, man. You can be a great painter if you choose to be.
Wow.
You should do this with me." And she just like was such a believer, even though I don't think I was exhibiting any. And that like really.
That's great.
Is the reason why I became, you know what I mean?
Well, I do. And that's actually where my head was starting all day. It was like, how come I don't remember Alec Egan taking art classes, being a painter? Like, I was like, how did I miss that? So, you know, here's this school that really knows its students. So they, wait, he's a painter? What? I don't, like, what are you talking about?
No, I wasn't.
So that was just, That came from that. Well, but you were drawn, like, what?
Well, I create,
what,
like,
what drew you to the art studio after hours when you weren't supposed to be there? Like, what was that about? Where'd that
That's a great question. I mean, and this also has to do with New Roads, I think, in a big way, is, you know, I at New Roads, me and like a couple other students started the poetry club, and that, you remember the spoken word thing that was, it was big. And
yeah,
there's like a tight-knit poetry community there that I felt very much a part of. And that was my thing. And that's why I decided to try to go to Kenyon, because it had the best, or one of the second best or something, creative writing departments in the country, with like very kind of hierarchical methodology about how you get into the poetry class. You either get in out of the application, or you're waitlisted, and then you go to the door in the English department and you see if your name's on the door. It was like a bunch of stuff that I wanted to experience, and I did, man. I did well. I got in and I tried, and it lasted. I was in it, you know, towards the end of my sophomore year. It became so the opposite of what was being embraced in high school, which was more of a freedom, I guess, more of a freedom of expression. Definitely more of a contemporary idea of what poetry and that kind of linguistic expression meant, and contextualizing it maybe within music and stuff like that. But, you know, this was like the five modern masters and old white guys and syllabic breakdowns and the images poetry. And I started to just feel really stuck, like confined. Simultaneously, I became the captain of the rugby team with a bunch of great guys who are wild men and artists and scientists and shit. And there was like this physicality.
All rugby players are wild.
Yeah, they are.
Absolutely.
And there was this physicality this kind of expression that I was able to get on the rugby field that I wasn't able to access in the writing. And there was needed to be this intermediary place where I could get both. And it happened in painting.
You know, okay, I just, but that's that, but that's still a puzzle. It's like, when you, were you growing up, like, did you have some story about becoming an artist or being an artist? I know you have art, you have artist parents in their own genres, yeah, right?
My grandma was a painter. And my mom made me take painting classes when I was like 6, 7, and 8. But no, I'd say that the way that I, art was maybe indoctrinated in us as children was as kind of a better to be a polymath than to be one thing. You know what I mean? Like, in order to be anything, you got to be everything. So yeah. I had an older brother who was doing everything, writing music and making drawings. And he was also dealing with nascent mental illness, so kind of was going all over the place, but that was very inspirational to me, you know. I looked up to that, and
but you weren't you weren't headed to finance or, you know.
No, hell no. I was writing graffiti and doing poetry and playing sports and getting in a lot of trouble and you know, being rebellious, but also just had this feeling because of my parents from, and what was said in our household when it was said was like, you know, it's better to be a worthwhile artist than anything in the world.
Right. Okay.
Try to cultivate your perspective. Try to cultivate your expression. Try to put them out there.
So those are like, you know, whatever you think of your parents' faults or foibles. Right. That's a way of seeing the world. There's some truth, I think, is that if you, you know, historically, if you look at what inspired, it's hard to know what inspired cultures, right? Over in historical times, right? Sure. What is it that made things turn in that direction on a mass level? Well, sometimes it's technology, right? But oftentimes it's the expression of people who've seen something, they have a passion for something, and they figure out how to express it in a way. And often it's art. And to hear that from your parents from an early age, I think is super powerful, because it really legitimizes, you know, art's not this thing you do as, at least that way, it's not this thing you do as a hobby.
Right.
And it's not this thing you do to, you know, to relieve stress. It's not an add-on. You know, there's your serious life, and then you can do art. Whatever that is, you could do music. It's a hobby. It's a thing. It's a thing I do to unwind. It's a thing I do with my friends. Well, all that could be true, but that's, I think, a much more common way for that kids bump into art, right? It's that. It has that place, you know, and then there's all the stuff that people say, right? There's like, well, you know, how many people support themselves as a poet?
Right.
All that stuff, as if college is, as if education is, as if learning is, as if life is about your job. And I understand jobs are important. Like, it's a way, it's important to make money, but to have that makes sense to me now. Now I can say, okay, I get it. I mean,
yeah, there was also kind of this, which I think you'll agree with too, is like, you know, when I was in my most formative years in high school, my dad was working at the Mark Taper Forum. And, you know, I think you're right about your assessment of how art makes its way, traditionally makes its way into kids' lives. And then there's this other way, which is like this highly fetishized, like, I'm going to be a fucking movie star, or I'm going to be a rock star, or I'm going to be sensationalized. And that's unfortunately what a lot of kids see in LA, is with, like, that's a possibility or something, you know?
Right.
But I had the privilege of having a father who worked in the second industry of the theater in Los Angeles, where he was cultivating basically minority voices and Center Theater Group and all this shit, where it was like, not about money. And it was like, these people need to fucking tell these stories for this community to be whole, you know? And I'm forced to go see those things on the weekend. I'm forced to go see the poets, those who, you know, meet the artists. And it just became a very, and also I saw the amount of work that it made, that went in to make those kind of, you know, the fundraising, all the shit to make that engine work from a very young age. And I just remember thinking and knowing, like, this is the discipline and the perspective are integral to having a valuable life, you know?
Yeah. It's also, I gotta say, I think it's bold. I don't know if you see that piece of it in yourself, but to try to make a life in that world, it's one thing to say, like, I am, I'm the one person from Los Angeles who does not think of themselves as an artist. Right? There's not, like, everybody in Los Angeles thinks of themselves as an artist. And yet, to really, you know, they're an artist, but they dabble, right? But to really, you really went for it.
Like, oh, yeah, man.
That's what you want to do. That's what you wanted to do. That's what you were going to do. And you did. And, like, that's wild.
Yes, thanks. I mean, that comes from a different, more savage place in me, where I heard a lot of the shit that you're talking about, where people are like, you can't make it as a poet. You're going to make it. And all that's meant to me was, okay, now I'm going to do this. You know, like, there's a big fuck you at every turn, like, up until a few years ago, really. Because that is on many levels, that is you gotta have grit, like, a lot of grit and will to want to make it, because it is very unsure. It's oil and water with capital, you know, the creating things and making money are not always anonymous. So,
did it ever take you by surprise that you made stuff and people said, "Oh, how much?" Like, "Oh, I'd like to represent you. I'd like to," like, or did you know you were good at it?
That's a good question. I think I felt like I had a few things that were compelling about what I was doing. Like, I felt like I may have had a power and, like, some rawness inside of me when I was beginning, but then the rest of that, did not take me by surprise, because I was, like, willing to give my life for what I was doing, you know, and I basically went to, like, rock bottom to get what I was getting. And I realized that that's what the experiment was all about, you know?
What do you mean by that?
So you go through, like, in order, unfortunately, mine is not an overnight success story, really. It's like, not like someone found me when I graduated from college and I was making those paintings in the studio at Kenyon and they were like, "Wow, you're something, man."
Yeah.
It was like, I had to believe in what that teacher was telling me, go all in. Then I spent about 10 years just lost, traveling across the country. I spent a lot of time in Iowa in, like, abandoned farmhouses and this town called Maquoketa, because real estate was so cheap. And I was just there to paint. And I was painting and painting and painting and living kind of in destitution a lot of the time. And I ended up in Portland and then Vermont, kind of in the middle of nowhere, chasing that cheap space, manual labor jobs, so I could keep painting. And putting on exhibitions or or getting them somehow, finding my way in. But the well kind of ran dry, and that's when I noticed, this is like around 27, I'd say, when I was 27, that's when I noticed like the first real contingent of people, of my peers, being like, whatever we were dreaming about has got to take a backseat to reality now, so we're going to go do this, you know? And I really hit a wall. I mean, that was the first dark time in my life where I was like, fuck, I feel alone. Every painter that I knew has decided that they're not going to be a painter anymore. I have to make a choice now. And I ended up going to grad school. So that was the first kind of concession I made that I didn't really know if I wanted to do it or not. And then in grad school, it was the same kind of series of hurdles. You know, you get in there, you're in a group of maybe 14 people and two classes. So that's like 28 people. And you realize pretty quickly that maybe five or six people have a serious intent of living their lives as an artist and making money from their art. The others are interested in it for teaching or networking or a degree or a thing and a thing and a thing, or maybe we just showing sometimes is okay. And so it was like interesting to see that. It was kind of, I was in a bit of disbelief, but through that process, I realized that I had to work harder, and I ended up graduating pretty much because I gave it, I was willing to go far for it, you know, graduating at the top of my class and getting picked up out of my thesis show by a gallery. But it's been like a series of things like that. There's like a lot of attrition, and you can see. There's a lot of smoke and mirrors, and that, you know, I can count the fucking real painters that I know on a hand, I think. And by that, I mean like people who really are giving their whole life to it, like to their practice, to making it happen, to the fucking the will to show, the will to want to engage people and keep going. And it's never, you know, the insatiable desire to keep making things, you know? So, yeah.
And is that still there?
Yeah.
Given all your success?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Cool.
And, yeah. And I mean, I have like weird, you know, yesterday I was kind of staring off into the distance for a long time in my studio, and I work with assistants, and they were like, what's going on with you, man? I had this profound thought. I mean, to me, it was a profound thought, a thought of profundity to me, which was, you know, there were like a weird hunter-gatherer society, and we've somehow created this like system of capital and economics around that. And then there was this other thing that we were doing, which is drawing on caves, like making art in caves. And right. It's very odd to continue that lineage, like to have it be inside of you, that DNA inside of you is very, it just feels very primitive sometimes, like that need to, yeah, the reveal the world to itself as like through the vehicle, through this flesh vehicle is bizarre, you know, it feels like it definitely feels like more and more as I get older, like a station in life that I didn't really choose, you know?
No, right. Yeah. Right. Yeah. Yeah.
And I don't know the meaning of it. You know, I can't tell you.
Exactly. I was about to say, the sentence on my mind is like, what the hell is that about? Yeah, right.
So there is this ineffable quality to it, and you kind of got to get, that's why, you know, I feel like artists are such fucking assholes, or they're really in touch with something, and maybe they're both constantly throughout their life, but you have like the journey has taught me that I just have to keep giving myself over to the unknown, to like to have a little faith in it, you know?
Well, okay. So can we talk a little bit about the work and you're talking to somebody, not only am I the only guy in Los Angeles that's not an artist, never thought of himself as an artist, but I'm also ignorant about it. So you're gonna educate me. So you paint on what?
Canvas.
It's always canvas.
It's always canvas. I mean, in the beginning, it was like
whatever you could get.
Yeah, yeah. I was stealing
wood, whatever.
Like, yeah, yeah, exactly.
Yeah,
that was fun. But canvas. And I work on paper sometimes. And also sculptures. I also make sculptures.
You also make sculptures. So that's what I want to know. It's like, is it ever more than that? Because it's, I will say that it's hard to tell. Every once in a while, there's pictures that I come across that where you can see, you know, looking at a screen, it's a screen. And, you know, you can't get closer and have it reveal its third dimension. So, you know.
Oh, yeah, they're like.
Everything's flat.
Right.
But every once in a while, you see something like somebody did a close up of something. It's like, oh, wait, that's not flat. There's thick, thick paint on it. Right. So, which looks sculptural. Like, sure. It's like, ooh. So, but there's not a lot of people.
No people.
No people.
Yeah.
There's the accoutrements of people, right? There's somebody's shoes. I don't know. Maybe they're yours. Boots.
Right.
Right.
Yep, or
there's things that people use and people live in or around or see, but there's no people. And so that's a choice of some sort.
Mm-hmm.
Has that become a choice that has become a thing? That now you're not allowed to draw people.
Well, I'm actually painting my first person right now.
Really?
First person in maybe a decade. Yeah. That I plan to exhibit. I painted a couple of people, but I haven't shown them. But that is a choice that is not like a prison. That's a very conscious choice.
That's good. Yeah.
Yeah. And my knee jerk, answer is we are way too self-reflexive. I don't need to fucking see another person. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And why we are so self-reflexive and why we are so obsessed with our shit and ourselves and our madness and the representation of beauty over and over, like nothing is good enough. It's a maximalist psychology that we live in. So the work aims to represent that also, like verging into this state of maybe nascent madness. The term I like to use is prodromal, which was like growing up. I mean, it speaks to my life because I grew up with someone who was a paranoid schizophrenic, but it hadn't expressed itself yet. But definitely the markers were there that the guy was fucking losing it, you know?
Your brother.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that was in the context of like a house in Brentwood that was filled with Laura Ashley shit. And, you know, it was bizarre to me. And so.
Yeah. Well, absolutely.
Yeah. And so I started asking myself all these questions, I think at a young age about like, you know, when you're getting beat up by a guy who's mentally ill and you're staring at a floral curtain, you're kind of like. You're kind of like, what is this escape? Like, am I supposed to be escaping into the beauty of this curtain right now? Like, why isn't it just a plain curtain? Those things kind of like confused me as a kid, you know? And so the interiors that I'm painting are kind of the prodromal state of some type of psychosis, I think.
Mm.
Whether it's
I will say, you know, obviously I haven't seen everything. I mean, sounds like there's tons, but they're beautiful.
Thank you.
And
disgusting.
I don't know about disgusting. They're beautiful. They're beautiful. And then they're.
Yes.
And then they're like intense. And then they're.
Yes.
And. It's kind of amazing. I mean, they really are.
Thank you.
Yeah. And the colors, like, you know, it's hard to know because I'm looking at it on a screen, right? But the colors are so rich. They're like, they're almost enveloping, but it's like rich food, right? It's like, I want to eat the whole cheesecake.
Right.
Right. And yet I know I'm not supposed to eat the whole cheesecake. So it's like, and so they're incredibly vivid and somehow they fit together. And yet it's like the don'ts column from Cosmo magazine. Whatever you do, don't wear all this.
Yeah. Yeah.
Go outside.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. That's right.
Don't put that together.
Yeah. Yeah.
So it's really, they're definitely compelling.
Like, oh, thank you.
I love it. I mean, I really love it. And the fact that, well, obviously, I'm so biased here. I love it. And I love that you did it. It's wait, you did that. Alec Egan. I know Alec Egan. He did that. So cool.
Thanks, cool. David.
I'm a little bit fanboy here over the top.
No, you're the fan.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I think, but I think this, you know, what, so the whole spectrum of the idea that you're looking at right now, I assume you're looking at images, is I came into graduate school with this creative writing background. I was like since high school, I've been a hyper narrative guy. You know, that's what I'm into. That's what I'm drawn to. And when I went to grad school, it was like a heavily theory laden program. And basically the blanket statements were painting is dead and, narrative painting is definitely not okay. Like if you're going to paint, no narrative painting. So then I was like, I'm definitely going to paint and I'm going to be a narrative painter. So
how come I didn't get that guy in school?
Yeah.
That guy was like, I expected that guy actually.
Really?
I told you this when I let you in.
Yeah.
I thought this guy's going to be work, man. No. This guy's going to be, I don't know about this. I don't know about this. And it was like, I kept waiting for that guy to show up and he just, and this man showed up. This really, really good human being showed up. So
that is the world to me.
When you started making this stuff.
Yeah.
And drifted towards, I'm assuming, I don't know if it was in grad school or afterwards, right? That you drifted towards, there's no people in there. There's a lot of things that you find around a house, I guess.
Well, then I'll walk you through. So,
tell me. Yeah, so tell me. Yeah,
I keep getting sidetracked. But
yeah, I know.
So I knew that I wanted to paint narratively. And I stood behind that. And I was able to kind of like work that through in my program and become loved a little bit by my professors for doing that. And they saw the value in it. And then I had that long period of my life on the road trying to paint, and I was like really depressed, really kind of, and I didn't have anything, you know. It was a very good time in my life in a lot of ways, because while I feel like a lot of people my age were taking that time to seek comfort or adventure, I was like at my physical peak in terms of durability, and I was like, let's put it to the test, man, for what we love. So when I was living in all these shitholes trying to paint, I just noticed that in the Midwest, man, in these burnt out towns, in these farm towns, in these blue collar places in Vermont, now every fucking house that I went into had this wallpaper, this shitty fucking 40s 50s 60s wallpaper. And when you really have nothing to go back to and you're there to paint and you're there to look at everything, you're like, you know, you just become enthralled by it. And I just remember thinking, this is the escape. Like, this is people's tragic method of escape, this wallpaper. And I wonder what it's like for, you know, and then I thought about how I grew up with the Laura Ashley shit and like, oh, this is just what we do. Like, this is kind of dark. It's kind of dark and it's very interesting, you know. Like, you look out, there's this place where I was painting called Baldwin, Iowa, and Iowa had also suffered a major drought, and Baldwin had kind of, the farming infrastructure there had kind of collapsed. And I think there maybe been maybe 1,000 people in the town or something. So the town kind of went dark in terms of, like, suddenly there was tons of meth. There's only one bar that, like, everybody would be in, and it was kind of scary. But, and you got these houses that were once, like, fruitful farmhouses were dilapidated, but people were still in them.
Yeah.
And I just felt like the connection between this and where I came from, like, needs to be represented. And the vacancy of the figure, you know, I don't want an identity to overwhelm this idea. I want the viewer, because this is such a ubiquitous cultural phenomenon that we decorate our homes with this shit. I want the viewer to be able to start to construct the identity throughout looking at the paintings, you know? And I don't know what that identity is. I think it's it's one that's ever revealing itself. So the idea then became, each exhibition would be a room in an imaginary house. I'd paint a bedroom, and all the details would be the subsequent paintings from the bedroom. That would be one exhibition. The next one would be the kitchen. The next one would be a bathroom. The next. So I'm like, I don't know, 10 or 11 rooms into the house right now.
Okay, well, at least I get a story. I got the story. So, is it always like that for you? Like, do you ever paint something just because that shows up in your imagination? Or do you paint things, do you have an idea about what you want it to be before it starts? Okay, I'm going to do the kitchen now. I'm going to do the attic. I'm going to do whatever the fuck it is.
Yeah, of course I paint shit that I just want to paint, but I'd say those are tributaries to the main sequence of events. I also do feel like there has to be some intellectual rigor involved in the painting, you know, like some thoughtfulness.
Whatever thing on the wall.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's not decorative. It's not just a decoration.
Right. Yeah.
Right.
And that's more of a, like, a populist understanding of painting. Not the one that I'm, not the cow on the wall, the being intellectually rigorous, because I want to be generous with people, man. I want to have them to have something that they have to think about, you know, that they feel deeply about.
Yeah.
Not to say that you can't feel deeply about a sunset, but you know what I mean?
Yeah, I definitely know what you mean. I definitely know what you mean. Wow. Okay, let me shift gears. We're going to go over our time. I hope that's okay.
That's okay with me.
I'll have to figure out how to cut it. You know, maybe there'll be two episodes of Alec Egan, but we also talked briefly, very briefly, about the art business.
Yes.
And so there's the challenge of you making work, you working and making something that you want to make, that says, I don't know if that's the right word, says what you want to say, whatever that means.
Right.
And then there's the, you know, unless it's got eyeballs on it.
Right.
Right. Like, so you have to put that somehow in the world of, and especially if you want to live your life that way.
Right.
You have to intersect with business of
sure.
So there's galleries.
Yes.
There's exhibition spaces. There's museums. Right. There's coffee shops. There's, you know,
yeah.
There's, hey, I'm having an exhibition. Come over.
Right.
Or whatever. So,
yeah.
So how does that all work? Is it tainted? Is it fucked up? Is it, don't say anything that's going to get you in trouble.
No, I'm going to say some stuff.
Because I want you to keep doing what you're doing.
Is it tainted and is it fucked up? Yes. It's deeply corrupt, strange world. It's the most unregulated market in the world, I think. And there are many hypocritical politics that govern it. And I think, as you know, that the plight of the artist's financial model is not one that's a secret. You have to give away 50% of anything you make in the art world.
Is that true? Is that true? Is that like across the board? Like
that's what? Across the board, man. That's across.
Okay,
the-
so you're represented by XYZ or maybe several XYZs, right?
Yeah.
You know, and then somebody walks into your studio because you invite them over, and
yeah.
they say, "Wow, that's fucking beautiful," or "That's amazing." That's I really want that. How much?
Right.
Do you get to sell that and keep the whole thing?
That's a good question. Some artists do, some artists don't. Depends on your agreement.
Really?
Stage in your career, your authority over your own career.
Right.
But, you know, there is this like whipping boy beginning that every artist has to experience, which is unfortunate.
Right.
Just at the whim and the mercy of.
Right.
Your emerging career where your market's being built and you're kind of like, yeah, at the mercy of the gallery that's representing you usually.
Right.
Hopefully
right.
that it's good. Sometimes it's bad. Sometimes they're coercive and cutthroat and unethical. And then you got to have the guts to walk away.
Right.
But the other thing that's in it, inextricable from the artist's personality is desperation, because you're like, shit, man, there are millions of people gunning for any spot in this thing. I gotta hold on for dear life. So it's this
and that's there.
Oh yeah,
that's just there.
Yeah, you hear about these. I mean, I think that's true all the way to the end, no matter what stage in your career you get. You know, I hear about my favorite heroes, artists who are still governed by money and still feel like the bottom's going to fall out any second, any day.
Yeah.
They literally could not have done more in the art world. You know what I mean? So I think that's just part of the pathology of the artist.
Is there a...
That's why there is no union. And that's why there is no...
Right.
Real deep community. It's because we are all fucked with that feeling of desperation.
Right.
You know, the main metric in the art world to deter or historically to determine an artist's value is their auction record.
Their auction right? record.
Yeah. Yeah. So you can have a primary price, which is what would mean is a work made and sold in exhibition, that would be your primary price. But a secondary price is when a work is bought in exhibition and then resold, right? Or auctioned. So your primary price is usually go up a little, depending on, you know, the interest and the demand, they go up relatively systematically exhibition to exhibition, year to year, until they hit a ceiling, barring that you go to auction, like a Sotheby's auction or something like that. Someone puts your piece at auction and a $50,000 painting that's selling in your gallery somehow goes for $1 million. Then your prices raise, right? Does this make sense so far?
Yeah.
Okay.
Who gets that?
Yeah, that's right. The auction house and the fucking...
And the person who...
Yeah, and the person who's selling it. Who gave it to the auction house. Yeah, it's a whole thing, right? So these genius fucking artists were like, they can do it, we can do it. So they kind of created a fictitious buyer and put their work at auction and bought it for a ton of money in order to raise their whole fucking market.
Oh, well.
And then kind of had control over everything in their career, you know, which I think is pretty. And
or they, if you're going to work in a system like that, it's like, well, okay, it's like hacking the system. So that's all right.
There's a double, a catch 22 there though, because as an artist, man, if you're doing shit like that, I feel like you're then spending so much time figuring out.
Yes, I was just thinking that.
Rat's nest.
Your energy.
The economics of the art world. Yeah. You're now, it's kind of a cutthroat businessman, you know? And people that I've seen do that, their artwork diminishes. They start making the same thing over and over again. They're like, you know, so it's like, what do you want to be? I'm not interested in doing any of that shit. But I am interested in, and this goes back to New Roads, man. I am interested in being very transparent, very clear, and aware about my boundaries and what I expect out of my community and the people that I work with. Mm-hmm. So I feel like I've had some tricky partnerships, but I've been able to be as very fucking clear, you know, this is the line that we can't go over. And if we go, then I'm going to have to have the courage to fucking walk away. And I do. And things are fine, you know, but yeah, it's that, it's the same thing with any other industry, man, to some extent. There are power dynamics and people feel like they're lesser than, and they can't, pick up themselves, and there's a sickness there for sure. And also, this is the part that I shouldn't talk about, but the facade of the art world is just disgusting. You know what I mean? It's like rich white people governing the art world, and it's literally probably the most conservative, fiscally right wing gamblers market run by those people, developers and all this, putting forth a facade of social, minority voices, social justice. This is what we stand for. When literally, you know, the black art portrait artist who's represented today and his work sells for $1 million this year will be dropped next year if the market is not okay. So there's no adherence or loyalty to the mission. It's just to the money. Do you see what I'm saying?
Right.
And all of that is an angle to sell the fucking painting. Right. So it's like,
it's not intended to be a gotcha question because it doesn't feel like that, but it is curious. Like, given who you are and your values, for you
to participate,
for you to make it in the art world,
right?
And you've made it in a certain way. Like, are you at the top of the heap? No, but it's impressive.
We're heaping.
And who can afford to play in that world to buy your stuff? That's not the people's art. You know what I mean?
Right.
So how do you think about that? Like, does it bother you? I'm not a person who thinks money is bad. Like, whatever. It's a way of exchanging stuff, and you know, and the inequity is bad in the world. But it's not money itself. Money is just, you know, it's like, whatever. It's like you get hit in the face with a football and it'd be a mistake to think of football as bad.
Right.
Right?
Right.
So, but there's a way in which that's the audience you have to figure out how to appeal to. Well, no, that you hope you appeal to.
Right.
You know what I mean? It's like, it's wrapped up in that. Maybe you appeal to all sorts of audiences. But the only way you can know that is if somebody buys your painting, right? Or wants you to do something.
Right.
And And the people who can afford, the people who can afford to reward you for doing the thing that you are driven to do and passionate about, they're, you know, they're at a certain socioeconomic level, and that's it. A poor guy can't buy your stuff.
Sure.
So it's weird. No?
Weird, man. It's weird.
So how do you think about that?
I think about that.
Or maybe you don't think about that. Now I should have shut my mouth.
No. I do think about that. I just never think that anybody... that's interesting. Okay, so I guess the way that I would think about that is I think that the exhibition is the platform for it to be for everybody. You know what I mean?
You're listening to Curiosity Invited with David Bryan here on LA Talk Radio.